Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are now in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. And like we have done with every chapter, we have separated this chapter into different parts. And in the last few weeks, we have been dwelling on the second part of chapter 11. Bhagavan begins by explaining what is Asti Bhati Priyam. And for many of us, these terms might be very new, complex. And Swami so beautifully explains how Asti Bhati Priyam is nothing but Sat Chit Ananda. Priyam is Ananda, what is pleasing. Asti means that which is, that is Sat, that which is all the time there, eternal. Bhati means that which shines. And that, Swami says, is Chit. It is that intelligence which helps us to recognize. Someone has to be there to see and recognize this truth. That intelligence which recognizes this is Bhati, that is that awareness, that is Chit. And Priyam, as Swami says, is what is Ananda. So Asti Bhati Priyam is Sat Chit Ananda. And when the devotee asks Bhagavan, how can I experience this? You are saying that all of us are Sat Chit Ananda Sarupas. We are all Sat Chit Ananda forms. If we are this, how can we experience this? And then Bhagavan says, for that you have to remove the obstructions of the past, the obstructions of the present. The obstructions of the past are when you are too attached to your name and form. When you remove both your name and form, then what remains is only Brahman, Swami says. The past obstructions are called Bhuta Pratibandhas. The obstructions of the present, Bhagavan says, are of four types. First, attachment to sense objects. Second, cynical criticism. Third, dullness of understanding. And fourth, absurd conceit. We did spend time on the first three in the previous weeks. Today, let's think about the fourth obstruction of the present. So these are obstacles that we have to deal with. These are traits that we have to overcome. We all the time want to know if we are God, if we are that Supreme Principle, if we are that Paramananda Swarupa, if we are that Atma Swarupa, as Swami says, why is it that we are not able to experience that all the time? And Swami is very clearly saying that it is because of these four reasons. Attachment to sense objects, when you have too much attachment to things of the world and things that are outside, how can you go within and tap your true self and the true bliss inside? Cynical criticism, when we are criticizing others, you are all the time looking out. Dullness of understanding, when we don't grasp the teachings of the master in the right perspective. Again, mind is clouded. And the last is absurd conceit, where Swami says, very often we fall into this trap that one has been able to achieve something. One has been a great scholar, or one has been a great manager, or a great vocalist, a great talented person in whatever discipline. And somehow, when that feeling comes, that is when we are creating obstacles in the experience of our true self. We are unable to tap into the infinite joy within. We are limiting ourselves to the thrills and the chills of identifying ourselves with our little achievements. Bhagwan explains how to overcome this, how one falls into this trap often, and how great people have succumbed to this, and how one has to be all the time aware. And Bhagwan also gives us solutions how we can do it easily if only we keep a few things in our mind, if we bring into our spiritual life certain practices and disciplines. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has written in this segment, and then we will contemplate on this fourth aspect, this fourth obstruction of the present, and go into his discourses and collect those precious pearls which will help us to shine in our spiritual path.
Now I know what is meant by the obstruction of the past. What are the obstructions of the present?
Good, I shall tell you. The obstructions of the present are of four types: attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. The first is the case of attachment to objects that attract the senses. The second makes men discover wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru. The third causes confusion because things explained by the Guru are not grasped at all. The last obstruction makes one feel that one is a great scholar, pundit, or ascetic, mistaking the body and the senses for the Atma.
And what are the obstructions of the future?
Oh, they come always through sinful deeds. They come and obstruct unawares.
How are we to meet them, Swami?
It is not possible for all. The sincere aspirant can to some extent know of the approaching sinful deeds with certainty, which could be in the nature of compassion leading to attachment. This should be recognized as an obstruction of the future. It is difficult to be forewarned like this as the result of the effort of one single life. It may take many lives to acquire this education.
Are there any who have so learnt it?
Why, there are. The scriptures speak of Bharata and Vasudeva. Bharata required two or three births. Vasudeva had to be born once.
That means these three obstructions cannot be known unless one takes many lives. Can we not succeed without all that bother?
Why? The aspirant can, by reasoning out the nature of these three, escape from being affected by them. Otherwise, undoubtedly, it may take many lives.
So yes, some of these obstacles are very challenging. In this segment, Bhagwan talks about the obstructions of the future, and that is very tricky. As Bhagwan says, sometimes you could be doing something thinking of it as compassion, but actually it is an act which is leading to attachment. To be aware of these acts, to be clear of one's actions, about the purity of one's actions, is not easy. Many times you might slip as you're trying to practice even a quality like compassion. So that is there as the obstruction of the future, and Bhagwan gives some examples and says that yes, this can be overcome, but what is more important is that spiritual inquiry. If you are alert and if we are all the time aware of what we are doing, then possibly we will ensure that we don't fall into this trap. But coming to obstructions of the present, as Bhagwan said, it is the feeling that one is a great scholar, pandit, ascetic, and you are mistaking the body and the senses for the Atma. When someone has ego, what is happening? You are identifying yourself with the body, or you are identifying yourself with your senses, with your mind. And that is where I and my feeling and I have achieved this, or I have been able to do this, comes to the fore. Bhagwan says in a beautiful discourse on October 11, 1978, the ego attacks the sage and the scholar, the teacher and the devout, everyone. In fact, Swami says, it attacks all these people, the so-called learned people, more than the ordinary men. Because their ego makes them proclaim that they can defeat others, that they have achieved something that others have not achieved, that they are indeed more learned or more gifted, more talented. Even they are more close to God. And Swami says that is when the slip starts. Because once ego enters man, then envy follows and your heart is occupied with envy. Comparisons happen. You cannot stand someone else doing better. Bhagwan gives the example of Arjuna. Swami says when Arjuna reduced to ashes the huge Khandava forest, his ego did not raise its head. But when he stood before the Kaurava army, his ego told him that he cannot engage in this war. He had made enormous preparations for this war. He had amassed specially powerful weapons after years of austerity and adventure. In fact, before the war, when Krishna offered to mediate with the Kauravas and gain some token of having yielded to the entreaties of the Pandavas so that war can be averted, Arjuna at that point in time argued with Krishna and saying, there's no point of going, your mission is going to fail. You think jasmine flowers will yield fragrance when they are thrown into fire? They cannot. Why waste your sweet words of persuasion on their deaf ears? Can life-sustaining nectar be got from life-killing poison? There is no point you going and talking to the Kauravas. I am all for the battle. I am ready this very moment. And that was what was Arjuna at that point in time. He was so bold. But suddenly when he was on the battlefield, we know how he was gripped with delusion. And he suddenly says, I have no desire to rule over this people. Everything is going to turn into a burial ground. I would rather go. I would rather beg. I would eke out my livelihood like a mendicant. There is no point doing this war. And that is when Krishna tells him, Nirmamo Nirhankara. One who is devoid of I and mine, that person alone can attain prashanti, prashanti madigachati. నిర్మమో నిరహంకార ప్రశాంతిం అధిగచ్చతి. ఓన్లీ దట్ పర్సన్ హూ డస్ నాట్ థింక్ ఆఫ్ ఐ అండ్ మైండ్ కెన్ అటైన్ ప్రశాంతి. Then there are so many devotees who come to mind, devotees who served Bhagwan with so much of dedication and with so much of absolutely no sense of ego, absolute surrender. I can think of Mr. Rama Brahman, the caretaker of the Vrindavan ashram. He gave a wedding card to Swami a few days before. Perhaps there was 1 week left for the marriage of his granddaughter. And Swami said, yes, yes, you should go for the wedding. And I will give you permission. You should go and you should attend this wedding. And days passed and Swami did not talk about it. And now there were only 3 days left and Swami has to tell something so that he can leave, because it will take him 2 days in train to reach his hometown from Bengaluru, because we are talking about perhaps the 70s or 80s. But Swami did not say anything. 2 days were left. Bhagwan did not indicate to him anything. 1 day. Now there is no point. Even if Swami tells go, he cannot go because you cannot reach that place in 24 hours. And on the day of the wedding, Swami looks at Rama Brahmam as he comes for darshan in the morning and says, hey Rama Brahmam, you did not go. Today is the wedding. And he just kept quiet. He said, Swami, if you wanted me to go, I would have definitely gone. And Swami was so happy. Swami looked at the people around and said, see, he is my real devotee. That conviction in Swami. And so many people told him, Swami would have forgotten. Why don't you ask Swami again? How will Swami remember everything? You have to ask now. 2 days are left. Just ask. Anywhere he wanted you to go. But he did not want to. That conviction in Swami, absolute conviction. And you don't identify yourself with your mind. You don't identify yourself with your body. If you identify yourself with your body so much and the bodily relations, then you cannot sleep in the night. You will think, I have to go today. I have to. Why, Swami? 2 days are left. How can I miss my granddaughter's wedding? So, if that becomes so important for you, then you will go to Swami and say, Swami, you had said I can go. 2 days are left. Can I go? And probably Swami would say, yes, 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 you go. And you would have gone for the marriage, yes. If you identify yourself with your mind, then all these people saying, you have to tell Swami. How can you just leave it? When Swami has told you that he can send you, you have to do your duty. You cannot keep quiet and wait for things to happen. How can you be so callous? So there can be so many ways people might talk and your mind might play games with you, but you don't identify yourself with your mind. You identify yourself with your Atma, and your Atma says, Swami knows everything. If anything has to be done, he will tell me. That conviction. And it is because of that conviction that there was a time when Swami embraced Ram Brahmam Garu and says, Swami said, you are like my Hanuman. That is what Bhagwan once told him. So to identify ourselves with that principle within is the way to clear obstacles of the present and identifying in knowing in securing realization of our true self. In a discourse in 1964, 16th of August, Swami says, Krishna addresses Arjuna in the Gita sometimes as Kaunteya. What does that mean? It means one who assimilates quietly. It means one who listens, absorbs quietly. He is Kaunteya. We think because he is the son of Kunti, he is called Kaunteya. Swami says, one who absorbs and assimilates in a serene manner the teachings, he is Kaunteya. It is not easy to absorb such profound teachings when you are in the battlefield, when you are standing between two opposing armies, eager for the fray for which they had prepared for years with unquenchable vengeance. It needs extraordinary self-control and concentration to be able to absorb such profound teachings. Bhagavan says Krishna addresses him as Kuru Nandana, which means he takes delight in karma. Karma dedicated to the high ideals. Kuru Nandana means, we often think he is the son of the Kurus, but Swami says no, it is the one who takes delight in action. So Bhagavan was saying every mode of address of Krishna has an inner meaning and appropriateness, and there is a lesson there. And Arjuna was trained by Krishna to control his ego. Before the Mahabharata war, Arjuna once happened to be at Ramasetu, as the story goes, and Bhagavan narrates this story too. So they were at the Rama bridge near Rameshwaram. And looking at that bridge, which was done in the Treta Yuga, Arjuna spoke of the bridge with some scorn, and Hanuman was there. And he said, you know, I could have built a bridge with arrows. I could have easily built a bridge of arrows single-handedly. I could have done it. There was no need really to engage so many monkeys and get so many rocks and trees and, you know, go through that whole process for days and weeks to make this bridge, piling up one rock over the other. What could have been done just with a few of my arrows somehow? With Hanuman and the others, it was done in such a circuitous manner. So Hanuman was there and he said, okay, that's a great idea. Why don't you build a bridge now with your arrows? Let us look at that bridge and how you can do it in a jiffy. And so Arjuna immediately fires his arrows and builds this bridge. So once this is done, Hanuman goes to that bridge and he begins to gently walk over that bridge. And the moment Hanuman does that, the arrows break under his weight. And that is when Krishna appears there. And Krishna says, No, no, this should be done in my presence. I can't believe this. That Arjuna's bridge was broken and that it is not able to stand the weight. I was not present when this was done. There was no witness when this challenge was made and accepted. So, Krishna says, you make the bridge once again. And so Arjuna makes this bridge for the second time with his arrows. And now, in Krishna's presence, when Hanuman walks over the bridge is strong. It does not break. And Arjuna is delighted. And he wonders, how is it possible now? And Bhagwan says, Arjuna realizes the truth when later on he sees streaks of red on the back of Lord Krishna. There were telltale marks of pain and strain and scars on the back of the Lord. Arjuna was absolutely brought to his senses when he saw that. Is it our arrows? Is it our talents? Is it our prowess? Is it our knowledge which is giving us our name, our fame, our position, our wealth? And Swami says, this is how Arjuna's pride was humbled. And apparently he prayed to Hanuman to fight on his side in the Kurukshetra war. But Hanuman said that the Kaurava army is too infinitesimal in a foe for his prowess. He said, I will just be a watch. I will just watch the fight from the flag of your chariot. I'm not going to engage myself in the war. And there are so many such instances when Krishna taught this lesson to Arjuna. When the Mahabharata war ended, towards the end of the war, one evening, Arjuna felt proud that Krishna was his charioteer. Of course, you know, given all the victories, every day he was returning victorious. And every day, even as Kauravas were losing one after another their generals, the Pandavas were marching towards victory and Arjuna was at the forefront of all these triumphs. And he was feeling really proud, and also that Krishna was his charioteer. And at that point in time, you know, you're overtaken with that feeling about you being the master and Krishna being the charioteer. Generally, in normal convention, you would want the charioteer to get down first. And then you get down. But generally what used to happen is he would get down from the chariot and then Krishna would get down. Because Krishna was a charioteer and he was the master, he was the archer. So one day he insisted that Krishna, you should get down first. But Krishna was adamant. it happens, isn't it? When you really achieve something phenomenal, then you feel, yes, it is my years of hard work that have done it. But for some reason, Krishna says, no, I will not get down first. Krishna insisted that Arjuna should get down. Only then he will get down. And Krishna did not relent, and he commanded Arjuna to get down, and finally, very unwillingly, Arjuna got down. He swallowed his pride. After that, Krishna climbed down the chariot, and they saw that the moment Krishna alighted from the chariot, immediately the chariot went up in flames. And that is when Arjuna understood why Krishna was so adamant, obstinate he was. He did not want to get on first. The reason is all these arrows and missiles that had been charged at Arjuna, they all got stuck on the chariot. And all these missiles were powerless because there was Krishna in the chariot. It was Krishna who had protected Arjuna as the charioteer. If his presence was not there, then all these arrows and missiles that had hit the chariot would have definitely destroyed Arjuna. And the moment Krishna came down the chariot was just nothing but ash. So there are so many such stories from our scriptures, and I think we don't need stories also from our scriptures. We can look at our own life. We can look at so many occasions when we thought that, yeah, we will get this done. I have that experience. I have the knowledge. I have the technology with me to get it done. But something will happen and it will just not fall into place. And there are times when you don't know what you're doing. You're just praying and you're just hoping. You're just doing your work, doing your effort, and things just happen. You are in that zone because you are being carried, because you said, I am not this body. I am not this mind. I am just a nobody. I am just like a flute. A flute is straight, hollow, so that his will can easily flow and make beautiful melody. Swami gives the story of Shikhadhwaja. So this king got a feeling of extreme renunciation and he left for the forest for ascetic practices. And his queen Chudala had the spirit of detachment. But she was a very, very wise person who never ever made a show of her deep spiritual progress. So when the king went to the forest, one day the queen put on a male attire and she wore an ochre robe and she had a rosary in her hand and she went and sought the king in the jungle. Once when she found the king, so she asked, oh, who are you? And the king said, oh, I was the ruler of this realm and I have given up everything, my riches and my treasure and my army and my court and my family. I have given up everything. So this queen in disguise asked, okay, so for the sake of what did you give up all this? And the king said, I gave up for the sake of peace. But yes, I have not yet attained that peace. I have come here to attain that And then the queen said, "You said that you have given up things. Giving up things will bear no fruit. You still have that pride of having possessed these things. You still have that feeling that I was a king, I had these possessions, I have given up. How can you experience peace if you're not able to detach yourself from the things of the body? How can you feel when you feel that I have given up, I had all these things, and now I have sacrificed with these feelings of I? How can you experience peace?" And the queen advises the king to learn to give up in the true sense and conquer this foe, this enemy of the inner realm. In fact, in one of the discourses, Swami says that ego is enemy number one. Enemy number one for us is ego. And this king falls at the feet of this, what he thinks is a new guru. And Swami says, this was the power of this queen, Chudala, who was a very virtuous wife, who became a guru for her husband. And there are so many such wise souls. Swami always talks about the gopis of Radha, of Uddhava, of Hanuman, Ramakrishna Paramahansa. He did so much intense sadhana. Swami says he felt that he was Hanuman. He was adoring the divine as Hanuman would do for Rama. And so much he identified himself with Hanuman that even his physical attributes began to change. He started developing a small tail. Such is the tremendous power of mind over body. Don't identify yourself with that, your body and mind. You become so one. Swami gives the example and another story of Bhojaraja. Now this Bhojaraja was a great patron of pundits and scholars. So the pundits of his realm had the grace of God in good measure. But there were many who were poor and they were struggling to keep their families above starvation. And one incident happened, Swami says, which turned the king's attention to this essential task. So one pandit was so down and out that he decided to turn into a thief and steal. But he said, "I'm not going to steal from poor people. I'll go and steal something from the king's palace itself. Because anyway, the king cannot be made poorer by whatever little I take. You know, that loss will not make the king, not make any difference to the king's riches." So somehow he crept into the private apartments at dusk, and though he had access to a large quantity of silverware and gold cups and plates, he managed to get into those rooms. He felt that he should just take what is needed. So he just took one or two things, and very, very inexpensive things. And so he was moving about with his bag that he had picked up, and it was a dark corridor and he heard noises, and then he realized that actually the king was there So quickly he went and hid himself. He went into this room and he hid himself under a cot. And he didn't know that that was the bedroom of the king. And now the Pandit realized this little later, and the king is now there sleeping on the cot. He is below, and he had to spend that night under the cot and unable to move, unable to sneeze, unable to breathe. So somehow he passed, he spent that night in that manner. 1 hour before dawn, when the king woke up and he sat up on the bed, you know, the king had this practice of reciting some stanzas. And the king, in fact, was reciting some stanzas that this Pandit had composed. They were so good that the king would recite those stanzas. And as the king was reciting them, somewhere the king forgot one word. So there was a gap. And the king was struggling to get that word as he was reciting that. That appropriate word was evading him. And this Pandit who was sitting below the cot, that word was on his lips and he could not but contain himself. And he just shouted it out because he saw the king struggling for that word, and he being his scholar, he knows it. He has composed it, so it just came out. For a moment, he just forgot that he was a thief and he's having this bag which he has stolen. And when that happened, the king peeped under the cot. And the king said, "What are you doing here? Why are you here?" And the king, given that he was a very, very considerate and very kind-hearted person, he understood the plight of the Pandit and he honored him for his scholarship. So it was the egolessness of the king Bhojraja which enabled him to see the plight of the Pandit. Instead of punishing him, he understood the misery of the Pandit and he decided to take steps to help all those people who are in misery like the Pandit. And the Pandit understood that he has to be true to his profession. He should have that faith that his knowledge will take care of him no matter what, if he is sincere and true to the work that God has given him. Bhagavan narrates this story just to tell us how beautiful things can happen through us. We can convert situations which are not so nice into beautiful opportunities to do good once we don't have that ego. Once we are able to not think of ourselves but able to think of the others. Not think less of ourselves but think of ourselves less. There are stories where Bhagavan has said, where a Pandit in the East-West Godavari district, even though he was every day preaching about how God will take care of you if you leave everything to God, but he himself was in misery, and how Bhagavan wrote to that Pandit, "Why don't you have conviction in what you're speaking every day? If you have that faith, if you have that conviction to follow anything, to all the time not identify yourself with your little self here also." While Swami gave this story to let us know that how it was through this story that the king learned to take care of the Pandits. But if the Pandit had really believed in what he was preaching all the time, then the resources would have come to him automatically. He didn't have to do this act. If we constantly have that conviction. And that conviction will come if you don't think about our limited knowledge and our limited capacities, our limited prowess. Only when you connect to something deeper, that is when you have that faith and you have that courage that there is an infinite power. So why do I have to limit myself to this limited knowledge? Whatever I know, that is indeed very limited. Swami says the world today is rolling in a sick bed, afflicted with fear, anxiety, and all types of phobias. What is the way to make the world whole and healthy again? Peace and harmony cannot be ensured when people tell themselves that they are brothers, Swami said. We find that even brothers and sisters of the same mother are not on the same page. Pride in one's own strength and power, Swami says, might injure thousands. But that pride will first injure that person first. The Gita directs man to be nirmamo nirahankara. The divinity in every person, Swami says, can manifest only when the dark forces of I and mine are rendered ineffective. To overpower the ego is not easy. Swami says even kama, krodha, lobha, when you have all these six forces of man, the root of all this is the ego. Rare indeed is the hero who has demolished his ego and escaped from its urges, Swami says. When a person suddenly lost a near one and he was in grief, a neighbor comes to that person and tries to console and comfort him and says, "My dear friend, don't worry. Anyway, every person who is born has to die, and birth, death means a new birth. These are the strange games that fate plays with us. We are but puppets in this show of life. Why are you grieving so much?" So he was giving all these wisdom. And Swami says a few days later, when that same person lost his own son, and now this neighbor came and started sharing all these Vedanta that a few months ago he himself was telling him, that, you know, one lives as long as one's karma lasts, and after that life is cut short because there is nothing more to be done in this life for that soul. It's a question of paying off old debts. So all these things that he was saying, all these things did not console. The same advice that he was giving to the other person, now when that's, he heard those same words, did not console him. Why? Because he had that feeling that it is my son. And it is this I and mine. Swami says that is the root cause of one's grief. We build a house for ourselves and we are happy that it is ours. When someone else pastes a poster on that wall and we feel our house is tarnished, and we go, Swami says, we go to consumer courts and we try to see, we have to punish the offender. How can someone desecrate our house? Sometime later, we sell that house to someone and we move off. And after that, even if their house is bombarded, we are not bothered. Why? Because we don't think that is our house anymore. So, it is this ego that identifies ourselves and limits us. So Swami says, you cultivate love, don't cultivate delusion. You can love your wife, you can love your children, you can do your duty. But don't lose your sense of proportion. Don't lose your hold on the true values. The ego will bring wave after wave, wants and wishes. The ego will tempt you to acquire things, to go ahead and fulfill many wishes, but that is a never-ending cycle. Swami says, reduce your wants and expand the range of your love in order to be free from the coils of your ego. That is the only way. The reason why Bhagavan asks us to do service is only when we expand our heart can slowly this I and my feeling will reduce. Initially, we think about ourselves, we think about our immediate family, but once we expand that circle, we feel for someone we think is not our own, and slowly we began to feel that same compassion, we feel that same connect, that same love, affection, then slowly we are expanding the heart. And that expansion, Swami says, is love. Swami says, expansion is love, contraction is death. So this Viyoga and Samyoga, this separation and union, Swami says, all this will not affect you. Because you are attaching yourself to God. To attach yourself to God is to love everyone without attachment. Then the delusion of the world automatically falls off. And that is what we saw in the life of Prahlada, Dhruva. There are enough stories, and we have seen so many devotees, be it Ratanlal Amma, be it Mr. Raman Rao. All of them attached themselves to God so much that everything of the world, everything of that connected their body to their family or to their world, it just automatically fell off. And giving a story of how in little ways we can cultivate this humility. Swami talks about Ishwarchandra Vidyasagar, how he used to live in a small village near Kolkata. The mother struggled to bring up this son. There were no lights in the house, and he used to sit under the street lights and study his lessons. He worked hard day and night, and finally he becomes a big officer, a great orator. People in thousands used to gather to hear his lectures. And once, when he was traveling in a train to go to some town to give a lecture, so there was a big officer who was also traveling in the same compartment to go to that same town to hear this lecture. And as soon as the officer alighted from the train at the station, he called for a coolie, a porter, to carry his briefcase. And so this porter came and he approached the officer and told, "Yeah, please, can you give me? I will do it for you. I will carry this for you, and tell me where you have to go." And the officer said, "Yeah, I have to go to listen to this talk by Ishwarchandra Vidyasagar. He's delivering a lecture." Oh, he says, yeah, I know. I can take you there. I know where it is being held." And with a lot of care, this porter took this officer to the place of the meeting. And as soon as they reached that place, the porter handed over the briefcase to that officer and said, "Can I take leave of you?" And the officer said, "Yeah, thank you so much. How much do I have to pay you?" And the porter says, no, it's okay. I just did it as an act of service. I'm happy. I didn't do it for money. I'm happy that I was able to do. No problem." And the officer was surprised. I mean, when do you see a porter not wanting a return for the work he has done? But anyway, so he lets it go, and then he goes to the meeting hall, and now everyone is gathered there for the meeting. And suddenly, when they announce the name of Vidyasagar, and Mr. Vidyasagar comes on stage, and he's profoundly garlanded, and he's brought to the stage with honor. And that is when this officer cannot just close his eyes. He's looking at Vidyasagar with open eyes, because it is the same person who lifted his briefcase from the station and brought him to the meeting hall. It takes so much of humility to be able to do that In fact, the moment the meeting was over, he fell at the feet of Vidyasagar and he begged for pardon for not recognizing him. But Swami used to always say that that is how humble one should be. Humility, Swami would always say, is the mark of education. Vidya dadati vinayam. That is what is the hallmark of education. So whatever we learn, whatever we do, if we feel that whatever I am, it is not me, it is not me. It is because if I'm able to forget, pass exam, I'm able to speak, I'm able to listen, it is because there is some power and I am nobody. If that power does not enable me, I won't be able to even breathe. Tomorrow anything can happen. Suddenly my hands may not work, my leg may not work, my heart might stop beating. You never know. Anything can happen tomorrow. Why tomorrow, the next moment? But if it is happening, if I'm able to do, it is because there is this atmic power and I am not what I'm thinking all the time to be. If I identify myself with that atmic power, with that atma within, with that source of everything within, then slowly, slowly, I will not be able to see the differences that are created in the external world because of the mind, because of the body, and I will slowly see unity, as Swami says, unity. The purpose of all spiritual practice is to be able to see that unity in creation. So once you go to that frame of mind, that identification with your true self, then what you see outside is only reflections of Atma. And then the upheavals outside, the upheavals of the body, upheavals of the mind don't touch you. So, but as a simple practice, if constantly we learn to say that, thank you, Swami, if I'm able to do this, it is only because of you. If every moment we are grateful, every moment if we surrender and say, Swami, if I was able to do this for my kid, for my spouse, for the office, for someone, it is only because you managed 99 things. That's the reason why I was able to do. For anything to happen, 100 things have to fall in place. Right from when you switch on the car has to start to weather should be cooperative to 100 other things. He makes everything happen. I think that realization will slowly help us to broaden our heart and connect to that source within. And that's what Swami is telling. We will learn to not mistake ourselves with the body and the senses and align ourselves to the Atma. That is one way we can get over the obstruction of the present. And there is the obstruction of the future, which we'll come to in the coming episodes of Vahini Satsang. Whatever I've shared is just one perspective, and I know it's very incomplete, inadequate. It is just one tiny stream in whole understanding, this ocean of understanding Swami's literature. And my apologies if I've not been able to communicate the enormity of what Bhagwan is saying. This is just one small thought process. Please feel free to add, feel free to share your thoughts, and let us together try to walk on this path, holding each other hands, encouraging us, each other, and with joy, seeing Him in everything. Thank you so much. Sairam.